Get real close to the TV, kids.
It's Josh and Frankie
with a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates. You found Primus Tracks. Congratulations. You can find us at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us at primustrackspod@gmail.com. I am Josh. Right over there is Frankie.
Hi, Josh.
Hello, Frankie. And the indestructible Tim Soya.
Guys, what's happening?
Dude, you're going to live forever. Don't forget that.
I don't know, man. I've been drinking a lot of water lately because I've been drinking way too much beer.
So hey.
Just letting you know, I'm more sober these days.
Balancing things out. Moderation is the key.
Indeed.
Good for you. We get to bring in a special guest today. He is the drummer for La Special, as well as the vocalist, especially when it comes to their Primus covers, which always impresses Mr. Tim Soya. Rory Dolan, welcome back to Primus Tracks, buddy.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Great to be here again.
Hi, Rory.
I want to mention on the air, you just played a show with our friend Mike Dillon. What was up with that?
Oh, yeah. Played a show up in Burlington, Vermont with Mike. He had his drummer was playing a festival down in Pennsylvania. His drummer, Nikki Glaspie, who plays this band, The Nth Power. She's an amazing drummer. And he just called me and said, hey, you got this date free? And I just so happened to have the date free. Learned a bunch of his music, drove up there, and did the damn thing. It was a blast.
You said you were going to have some video of that. Will that be up at Rory Dolan Drums on Instagram?
Yeah, I've been posting some clips, and the video is like 2 hours long, so I just uploaded it to my computer. I'm probably going to put that on YouTube, and there's a recording I'm going to throw up, either just YouTube audio or put it on like archive.org, so be on the lookout for that. I'll link you to it.
Rad. Yeah, we'll be happy to link that one. I'm going to clip out of context you saying, I'm going to throw up. I think that's a good review for Primus Tracks, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
Every time Frankie says something about Bowie,
Yes,
Rory's saying, I think I'm going to throw up.
You can build a little sample library and you like hit them on a sampler or something.
Yeah,
like,
you'll have a radio show. Keyboard interface right there and be able to go, Rory throwing up.
It'll be the letter B
farting
for Bowie.
Every time something Bowie or Simple comes up, it's like,
there you go. I'm going to throw up.
Oh.
Man, well, thanks for joining us again, Rory. We're talking about Duchess and the Proverbial Mind Spread today, track 10 from the Brown album. Before we get into that track, we actually have a couple pieces of miscellaneous debris, thanks to some very intuitive listeners. We talked about Pudentain a little while ago, and we received a message from Blas Perez, who sent a portion of Geddy Lee's Big Book of Beautiful Basses, or whatever it's called. And the Les Claypool chapter, when he's talking to Les, Les mentions that he belonged to something called Demolay, or Demolay, which was akin to the Junior Masons when he was a kid. Soya, we're just adding fuel to the conspiracy of...
right on. I won't see Les for maybe another 3-4 weeks, and the Mason questions are brewing.
I really hope you grill him on that.
I'll try. It depends on his mood if he'll want to talk to me about it.
Oh, man. So there's a little piece there. So thanks for that one. As well, our pal Joe Power, who donated for server costs the other day, but also said his name was not made up. He confirmed that. He said that Pudentain is roughly in sonnet form, you know, with the lyric, I'll write us up a song, pen a sonnet if the melody sits all wrong. And so I had to go back and look at it because I didn't recall it being a pure sonnet, and it's not, but we came to the agreement that Les Claypool probably or studied the form and then took his Les Claypool liberties with it, as he often does.
What makes it a sonnet versus a song?
Well, the lyrics form a sonnet. There's a certain number of lines, there's a certain rhyme scheme, as well as a certain thematic element to it. So I don't remember all the details, but it's close to a Shakespearean sonnet, which is,
oh wow,
of course, something that Les would do. He'd get that close and then do a Claypool thing to mess with it. Sounds right.
I only know Dead Kennedys and punk rock, so I don't know. Sonnets.
Think back to your ninth grade English class there, pal.
Dead Kennedys, DRI.
There you go. You were busy. Yeah, you were busy.
So that means, Josh, that in Pudentain, Les is kind of a minstrel.
You could argue that he is minstreling. Oh my gosh, I want to see him in that costume now. Yes. With a little ukulele.
Holy mackerel stuff, dude. Come on. No way.
That's right. Yeah.
Bases are already covered in that stuff. We'll get to that soon.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully. So that's our miscellaneous debris. Thank you, guys. If you have any miscellaneous debris, please email us at primustrackspod@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at primustracks. And now we get to talk about track 10, Brown album, Duchess and the Proverbial Mind Spread. unlike recent tracks, Frankie, this one seems to have a rich live history.
Pretty much, Josh. Yeah. It's long and complicated. It was premiered in June 1997, and it stuck around the set list all throughout 1997, 1998, and it made it over onto the Antipop tour in 1999 and 2000. I'm guessing, you know, out of all the tracks on the Brown album, well, we already discussed that there were a few tracks that made it into the Antipop tour, but I'm pretty sure this one made it because of the drum part, which is a showcase for Brain. And after that, it vanished from the sets for a while, and it only reemerged until 2008 with the Fancy Band. So we're going to hear a little bit of that at the end of the show, because it's quite an interesting interpretation of the song. It was also performed by the Fungi Band. I remember that with these configurations, Les had a drummer on stage, but also percussion. So there was an interesting communication going on between both instruments during this song. And after that, the song came back for the return of Primus in 2010 with Jay Lane. And all the way from 2010 until 2017, they performed the song a lot. For some strange reason, they haven't done it since November 2017, so they skipped it altogether in the last couple of tours. But it's definitely a number that they enjoy doing, and it's clear in the live history.
Definitely. I could see that not making it to the Slayer tour set list for pretty obvious reasons. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have to note, Frankie, that the Wonka tour, it was prominent almost every single night.
Yeah.
That was one of the enders. There was two or three that we did at the end there. They did at the end of the night. Yeah,
it was usually Bastards, Duchess, and sometimes Fisticuffs.
Yes.
Oh, and Pachyderm, of course.
Right.
So Duchess was a mainstay for those encores, right?
It was a good one because it allowed Teddy and Mike Dillon to really explode in that odd time signature, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got to do some fun stuff.
Because those guys both knew about odd time signatures.
They're both veteran musicians. So. They can get down with that for sure. Speaking of odd time signatures, Soya and I can't remember, Rory. We should start talking about the track itself. Is it in 7?
No, and I heard you and Brain talking about how it was in 7 that day. I was like, what are they talking about?
He didn't remember it. Is it in 5/4?
So, like, it's in 11, really. So it's 11 beats. But I've always broken it into, like, a bar of 5 and then a bar of 6, because you're not usually counting all the way to 11.
Right. So, I always guessed 11, but I can't follow and count. I'm not professional enough to count.
No, you got it.
Because Les goes, it seems like he's just playing in 4, and Lur just plays ink, ink, ink.
Right. And then Lur's part, because we're in an odd time, even though he's just skanking, it does this thing where it kind of loops over the bar line and creates this cool kind of cross rhythm, which as a drummer who loves odd time signatures is a really cool effect. But yeah, I mean, we could talk about the groove a little bit now if you want.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, let's dive in with the drums while we have you, pal, before that storm knocks you out.
The nice thing about this one, and as is like a lot of, and when an odd time signature has just a quarter note drawn through it, like underneath it, because he's just stomping along with his bass drum. Let me just play the groove for you, and then I'll kind of deconstruct it.
So, do bat, do ba da ba do.
So my bass drum is giving you 11 beats. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 1, 4, a 5, a 1, 2, 3, a 4, a 5, and a 6. No, 1, 2, 3, 4, a 5, a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, 5, 6. So the cadence for the last two beats of the phrase before it loops over, Brain will usually do either the two toms there or like some chokes landing back on the 1. And so, yeah, like breaking it down into 5 and 6 would be like this, like a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, a 1, 2, 3, a 4, a 5, and a 6, and a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a 1, 2, a 3, a 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, a 5, a 1, 2, 3, 4, a 5, and a 6, and a 1, 2, 3, 4, a 5, a 1, 2, a 3, a 4. Okay.
Amazing.
it's like in an octave signature, but it really grooves because also because Brain is swinging those eighth notes or the really like eighth note triplets. So instead of playing it kind of like straight eighth notes, it's swung. That. Which gives it a nice kind of loungy kind of jazz feeling to it. And yeah, it's just a great groove.
So by doing that, by swinging it, especially on the hat, I mean, that's where my ears go. So I'm not even trying to count it out. And I think that really helps it become a groove rather than a weird proggy song in 11 for the sake of being a weird proggy song in 11.
For sure. Brain, like Herb, I guess Herb sometimes plays with a little bit of that swing in his playing, but I feel like the Brown album has a couple tracks where Brain is kind of leaning more into that inflection. Hats Off is another example. I remember Jayski saying something about that, like one of the things to get about Brain's parts was that kind of swing that they had to them. But that groove's great. I love all the chokes that Brain does, like coming back into it. Like all those cymbal grabs, they're great.
You have to let go of the cymbal before, like without it ringing. He goes
exactly, super, super, like just choked.
There's no
staccato.
Let go of the cymbal and it's still ringing. That's how Wayne did it. It was
totally
forced.
Yeah, really.
Even in the middle of like 10 million hits,
yeah,
he'd grab a cymbal and keep going a million miles an hour. How did he do it? I don't know.
That's a big characteristic of his sound, and Jayski does that more. Jayski will do that as well, but Herb, you don't hear Herb doing a whole lot of cymbal grabs, you know? It's definitely more of a Brain thing.
Herb only has, like, one cymbal, usually.
Yeah, well, especially now,
it's all bells and splashes and ding-dongs, and because he doesn't want big, crashy cymbals anymore.
Too much wash, right? He doesn't want all the wash. And neither does Les, right, in his mix.
Whoa, you said that. I didn't say that.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, man, I mean, the groove is great. It's one that Le Special has played. We actually played it with Mike Dillon. I mentioned to you guys before, we've performed it with him, which is super fun.
Awesome.
You know, it's just a great, it's a good drum-centric song. Like you guys were saying, it was a good highlight on the Wonga tour for, I think it would usually be like Herb would go, and then maybe Les and Herb would go back and forth, and then maybe they featured the other two guys, like you said. But yeah, as far as I know, the middle of it, the drum solo, is just in 4. I don't think they're really playing in 11 anymore, because they're just... He's playing kind of a through-composed thing, which kicks ass.
And yeah, I think Les on the bass is just sitting on the same note. Bram, 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 boom,
exactly.
Bram, bram, and then Larry's skanking over the whole thing, too. And Brain just gets to do whatever he wants. Right? Well, so I want to ask you, it seems like the bass drives this tune. So I think it was the bass lick. But then Brain's swinging it, which is great. He's not playing it straight ahead. He's swinging it. Do you recall this being one where Brain just took off and played a solo like that? Or was that planned?
I could definitely remember that this was not one of the songs that was part of the ultrasound pre-recording jams. I think this might have been a lick Les had. And it came up in a day whenever it was jam time. Let's try to find something else. What's the next thing, you know? And Brain just would unleash on something. And he knew it was in 11, you know, Rory. Brain would know that. I mean, he's called Brain because he knows about that shit. And it just unfolded, you know, and listening to it today, it really strikes me as like, they just jammed this one out and it became a song. I can hear it, you know?
Yeah.
Brain's big solo in the middle there was made up on the spot. That was like a take, you know?
Yeah, that's a great solo. Very succinct, a lot of energy all at once, burst of Brain.
You know, that's like, awesome. If you go back to the Limbos, the Limbo Maniacs, and there's that one beat. That what's the one the Beastie Boys used it in Shake Your Rump? Cat, cat. I don't know what original song it came from, but
I'm not sure.
That's what that drum fill in the middle where he goes. That's the influences where that came from, you know.
Hell yeah.
So Rory, when I heard the rehearsal version of this track, you know, the one from June 2010 in particular, a little more so than the studio track. There were some portions of the song which reminded me of something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And then I realized what it was. The guitar melody and the drums sound a lot to me like watching the detectives from Elvis Costello, but a lot faster. And okay. that song is considered a hybrid between new wave and reggae. So I'm wondering if Duchess can also be considered kind of reggae in some parts. Can you play it, Josh?
Yes.
So what Larry's doing on the guitar reminds me of watching The Detectives.
What was that?
It's a
that was a June rehearsal,
right? With Jayski on drums.
So
yeah. Oh, okay.
You're like, yeah, that doesn't sound like Brain.
I thought you were playing Elvis Costello. I was like, no. That's Elvis Costello.
It's exactly like it.
I can see what you mean, Frankie. I mean, it has to do with Lur's part, the skanking, you know, kind of police-esque in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
I could see how some of that could definitely be related to that. That, you know, Les used to play that line when they would jam this out on that tour. We saw 2010 Gathering the Vibes in Bridgeport, and it was the first Jayski's show I saw back. First Primus show I'd seen in 4 or 5 years since the Beat a Dead Horse tour. And that was just a triumphant return. They were having such a good time, great vibe. I remember that version in particular, Les played the same kind of bass line under the drum solo. I remember being really impressed with the way that Jay laid into the solo and utilized the double bass as well, because he hadn't really played double bass before that. At least that's what he said. And he was sounding right at home with it.
Right on. Yeah, there is some of that in there. And of course, when you get a different drummer, you're going to get some different voicings. And Jay's got the repertoire and the chops, and he can do whatever he wants. So it's really interesting that they took it in that direction on that rehearsal EP in 2010 as they were getting back together. I do want to circle back around to the Brain drum solo on the record.
Sure.
First of all, it's very different than what we just heard from the rehearsal EP, because Brain is just plowing, you know, he's killing it. And I love that, because that's Brain. That's that energy. Soya, you said something a little a ways back, a few episodes back, that Brain was, you felt like Brain was kind of holding himself back on the album. And I think Brain said that too. And
well,
I'm curious,
I mean,
about
it's not so much holding it back. It's that, like, Brain had said himself, like, they never really had a chance to develop the songs past that one quick moment. We had a few weeks at Ultrasound, and then we moved everything up there to Rancho. And it was like, let's go. No, so I think it wasn't that he didn't have enough time. He wasn't allowed to have the time to make it what he really wanted it to be.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I wanted to draw a parallel there, because in this Brain drum solo, which sounds freaking great, I want to draw a parallel between that idea that he just didn't have enough time to really flesh things out, between that solo and then the 27 seconds of Brain that we got on the Holy Mackerel tour the previous year.
Yeah.
Which is, I've heard some of those live recordings, and he is wrecking shop on those 27 seconds, you know. And then on Duchess, that almost feels tame in comparison.
I mean, that's par for the course of what you were asking me, you know. Like, it had to be in time. He's in a song that's in 11, and granted, like Rory says, that that solo hits, it's in 4 or whatever, and then he goes to the end, it goes bump bump, then it goes back to the 11, right?
Totally.
But, you know, he's like recording and he's like making it up on the spot. That's not a worked out solo that he went home for a week and worked in his drum studio at home and said, this is what I'm going to play. You know, it was like, here we go. Record, Brain, go. Stop, stop, whoop, fuck. And he'd look at me like, fuck, I think I didn't fuck up. Did I fuck up? And Les would be like, oh, you got it, dude. You got it. You know, it's like, fuck.
I think it's a great solo.
On the spot, man.
Yeah, I think it's perfect for what it is, and it's like, it's not too long. It's intense, little burst. Okay. The 27 seconds of Brain, you know, it's like he did a different one every night. I was watching a Holy Mackerel show a couple weeks ago, and it was from somewhere, I don't know where it was from, but it was funny because Les says he's going to do 27 seconds of Brain, and he does. Brain does like a more tame, like very more like subtle whatever, and Les is like, what the hell was that? And he makes him do it again, and then he really goes for it. Like,
oh,
he was just
one,
fucking with him.
Oh yeah, Rory. I think that's one of the few videos of
yeah.
All macro
it's a good it's
available.
A good video.
Good quality.
Fucking
yeah.
with each other in that dude. Yeah. It's like Brandon's so trying great. To go. Fuck you! I don't want to do 27 seconds of Brandon. I'm gonna go. Beep, dap, doop. Yep. Les goes, nope, do it again. Yeah. Like, all right, motherfucker.
You know, he was
just kills it.
But I mean, yeah. he went easy on Brain on that one because I have heard others where Les is brutal. There's one in particular where he tells him, like, Brain, you exceeded your time allotment by a few seconds.
Oh,
something
sure.
that Tim Alexander would never have done. Mm-hmm. That one was brutal. Ah. Yeah.
Great.
Hey, there's some hazing involved, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
I just want to say something about the solo. In mm-hmm. 2003, Animals was my second purchase after Tales from the Punch Bowl. So when I watched that DVD, I had not heard the Brown album. I was not uh-huh. familiar with Dutchess. So when I was exploring the extras and I watched the performance of Dutchess at HBO River for the first mm-hmm. time, I was so blown away by the drum solo because I had never seen anybody do something like that with the drums before. I mean, the intensity that he uses to play it in that performance in particular, I think it's parallel to what in previous generations other people probably felt when they saw Bonham perform.
Hell yeah. Yeah, Brain definitely has a good amount of Bonham in him, for sure. Not to mention playing similar setup, sounding setup, you know?
Right, yeah. But, I'm curious, too, Rory, the swinging part on the hat. I want to come back to
mm-hmm,
that. It reminds
for sure.
me, especially when they play it live and everybody gets a chance to solo over mm-hmm. that. It reminds me of just like going to a winery, seeing a jazz combo, you know, and they're playing mm-hmm. some kind of jazz standard and the horns fall out and the drummer's just swinging along. And then
just
the bass gets
time.
A solo,
yeah.
the trumpet gets a solo. Then the drummer gets to show off a little bit. I don't know. It just... It's the weirdest thing to make an association for in this tune, but it all goes back to that hi-hat. So there's just swinging along on that. And I don't know if you've, you know, played a lot of swing or in that style, but it certainly has that vibe.
Totally. I mean, that makes sense. Like when you think about that rhythm, if you take the 11 out of it and you take that phrase out of it, you essentially have what is the rhythmic language of like a blues shuffle or a jazz swing pattern, or at least part of it, is basically taking those triplets, triplet, 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 taking out the middle note of the triplet. So if a triplet's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, you're just playing the 1 and the 3. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Really slow kind of blues thing, and then if you kick it up to the Dutchess tempo,
yeah.
So it's just the fact that it shares that kind of rhythmic. That's just the territory with that rhythm. It's going to make you feel a certain way. If it were straight eighth notes and it was just completely different feeling. It starts
right.
to feel like something from the 80s. I don't know.
Right.
But
yeah.
you know what I mean? It's like straight up and down.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I'm right on the cusp, 89. You know, it's a completely different association and feeling, and it makes sense. I mean, certain grooves make you feel a certain way, make you think of certain
yeah.
things. So,
and is it required on that five or six when you close the hat? Is it required
mm-hmm.
to shrug like that, like you're doing every time?
No,
I
just
that.
Can't help it.
Okay.
I can't help it.
I love that.
Yeah, man.
Man, it's important to know that Brain is a scientist on that exact stuff that you broke down, Rory. You know, like
mm-hmm.
he came up with that on Les's bass groove, you know, like
mm-hmm.
that's where his brain went, like
totally.
The groove on the blues triplet mm-hmm. in 11, and he's like made it up. He's like on the spot. Okay, how about this? It's like
yeah.
Wow.
And that's the best situation.
I would try to play 4/4 on top of it and hit Les say next. You're
well,
out.
It's what's interesting, right? And what's interesting about that is that I doubt Les had conceived of it in the way that he thought it was an 11. He probably just wrote the riff and he's like, I don't care if it's an 11, whatever, just do your thing. And then Brain's
well,
like, okay,
Les totally knows what he's playing,
yeah.
you know. And he knew that Brain that might have been a challenge, like, here's something
mm-hmm.
in 11, let's see if Brain can get it. And Brain came
right.
up with that, and it's
totally
incredibly awesome, you know.
It makes it groove. You take an odd time signature and make it groove. That's the goal. You know, I mean,
that's
anyone
Brain.
Could play.
Brain
this,
is
like,
amazing at that. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Uh-huh. And it's one of the three. I was thinking about this. So obviously we've got 11 right off Seas of Cheese. That's the other
yep.
two in an 11. That's more like 11-8, not so much 11-4. But and then I dare say Southington Waltz is actually in 11 because it's 3 bars of 3 and a bar of 2. So this is the third Primus song in 11 as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm. I'll buy it.
But yeah, hey, I may as well take a stab at the solo because I memorized
it. Oh, yeah, that would be amazing.
Please.
Let me try. I'll sing a little bit for you guys, too. Duchess, she used to be a movie maker. She used to like to wash the boys and wash her. And she saved enough money to go to Cal and spread her mind daily. She used to file the dead with Arnie. And it made $100,000. But ended up in federal prison 20 years for spreading mind. And so Brayton would still play it like this on the chorus. When Jayski played it, he played the chorus up on the bell of the ride. Something to keep in mind to give the chorus a little bit more lift. So he'd go... a little note.
That's so jazzy.
Here comes the solo. And so on.
That shit was note for note. Are you kidding me?
That was badass, dude.
Wow. That was amazing.
All you're missing is the north drum.
Exactly. I had to bust out the...
That's what I was thinking.
I had to bust out the one octave on to supplement the north drum, because for some reason I don't have any north drums. I'm not sure why.
North drums. We're looking at you.
eBay.
Yeah, right? Those things look crazy.
What a sound you get out of them, too. But that, I got to tell you, man, that sounded exactly like it was on the record. And I might clip that and play it against the record, and I think
hell
it's
yeah.
going to be right on. So
thanks,
rad.
Brother.
All right, Rory, listen, this is the Beastie Boys from, I'm going to say, Paul's Boutique was 88.
Year of my birth.
Josh, are you looking at it? So the song has this big intro. Skip that big intro, but when the song kicks in, it's the fill. Brayton has played it in his drum video, his first one. Have you ever seen his first drum video?
No, like Brad shreds
the
nar-nar.
He's doing go-go beats.
Yeah.
It's a go-go fill that super fast single strokes thing is from.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the Beastie Boys sampled it. It is.
Oh, sick.
There it is.
Nice.
That's the influence of that. Fill in the middle of that solo. You
know? I love it. That's great. I never would have guessed that it was.
I don't know what it's originally from. I'd have to ask Brain or ask anybody who's hip to cool music.
I'm sure there's a Beastie Boys podcast out there that will.
There's a really cool website called called whosampled.com. Have you guys heard of whosampled.com?
Right. Yeah. No.
And you can go like for that song in particular, you could just type that into whosampled and you figure out what the samples are from. It's pretty interesting when you listen to hip hop and you're like, oh, that sample is also this song too. You know, you just connect all these dots. It's pretty cool. I'll have to look that up. What's the name of that track?
Shake Your Rump.
Okay, sweet.
It's
easy to remember.
It's the opening track on Paul's Boutique.
Okay, sweet. I'll check it out.
Whew, it says it contains 14 samples.
It's great.
That whole record is amazing. Rory, get that record. Listen to that whole thing. Brain did a drum video. Shredding Rippus on the Narnar. Have you seen
that?
Yeah.
Yep. I remember hearing about it and seeing about it, but.
Okay. So Brain made a drum video that took a decade to actually make to fruition. Mm-hmm. And he had recorded all kinds of stuff before the Limbos got big and way before he was into Primus or in Primus. And then a lot of stuff got recorded when he was in Primus and he finally got the video together and it came out and that's called Shredding Rippus on the Narnar, right?
Yep.
But there's old footage from 10 years before that he had done with Pete Scaturro was the producer trying to film him doing stupid stuff. And there's a moment where he's on the roof of a building in San Francisco and he's got a conga left of his hat and he's wearing underwear and some like funny black shoes and he's playing go-go beats and he's old shitty fucking drum set, like super shitty, like on purpose, you know? And he plays that fill. He's like,
there is a
and it's like, that's that beat, you know. And then the Beastie Boys took that fill as well and put it on Paul's Boutique, you know.
There is a little bit of video in slow motion on Videoplasty.
Yes, I was going to say, I was wondering if that's what that's from. Like when he's in his room, like playing on the little drum set, and his mom comes in.
Same video,
like, Brian.
His mom comes in.
That's a funny one.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Mom, I was ripping!
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that episode, by the way, was amazing. Congrats on that. He was so much fun to listen to.
Yeah. We can bring it back around to the studio version here of Dutchess, where Brain certainly is ripping. On that solo, and but we should definitely talk about the bass and the guitar. But this is one of the rare Primus tracks where I don't have much to say about the bass, because we get the riff, and then we get the riff, and then we get it down an octave.
Yeah, right.
Same lick, and then we get those quarter notes and a little bit of a slide here and there. But the whole thing's built on the lick, and Les gives us that lick, and it's a great little lick. But he runs down an octave so that Lur has space for his musical chorus, his guitar riff there. And then he's just sitting on that note for Brain's freak out, and then he comes right back to what he had before. But it's a really cool, elastic, bouncy riff, and it sounds like he's only playing about three or four notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he started doing more interesting things with the riff around 2010, particularly with the pachyderm bass. He started, improvising a bit. Like we heard on this rehearsal, I mean, he's got the envelope filter on, and in my opinion, it sounds great for this track.
Yeah, I think it works there for sure. And I mean, it's like you're saying, the riff is essentially the song. Without that riff going, it's like, what do you got? You got that drum beat, and that's totally following the architecture of that riff. Like we said, like Lur's guitar part, he's going with his tried and true skanks, but the fact that we're in 11 has this cool kind of cross rhythm over the bar line thing where he's on and then he's off, he's on, then he's off.
Well, I wanted to comment on that when this came up, is it sounds like Lur is on the downbeat as opposed to the upbeat.
Exactly. And that's what the cool thing about it. Because if they were just
told me like Lur goes chink, chink, and this one sounds like it's all chink, 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 chink. He's on the up on that one.
I love that about it. It's the kind of thing that might drive other people crazy, but like I love that. I love that kind of that rhythmic tension, you know?
Yeah. And it's going to switch up and sound weird because he's doing an even numbered thing and we have an odd number for our time signature. So that's that crossover you're talking about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Music is just applied math, guys.
Wait, hold on. Where's my beer?
Well, to talk about the guitar just a little bit, we got the skanking, and it gives us that odd off-kilter thing, which is, you know, just after talking to Larry, it just sounds like that's what he wants to find. He wants to find the off-kilter. He wants to find the strangeness, and he wants to find the thing. He just basically generally said, make it more interesting, and it doesn't have to be the most musical thing in the world to make it more interesting. It can just be hitting the downbeat on an odd time signature and then throwing people off with that. And it's simple, but it's interesting. So,
well, Lur knew the right moment to shine in his solos, and obviously this is the springboard into what the Space Jam and all the jamming was in their writings. You know, the structuring is so simplistic on this record, you know, of all the songs, you know?
Right?
And obviously, Antipop was very structured and well produced by a different producer on every song, and then it dissolved, and then Les went jam, and then when they came back to Primus, and all these songs were already kind of poised to like be able to break down because there wasn't really much structure.
Right. You can bust it wide open. And then this one, they clearly gave themselves a door to walk through.
Totally. And on the Wonka tour, it was the champion at the end. You know, obviously, you know, it was amazing every night. You know?
Yeah. A couple last thoughts on the guitar. The Lur's little walking riff on the musical chorus. I love that. That's one of the first Lur things I actually could learn how to play by ear because he's not doing anything too crazy, but it's just a little walking thing and it sounds great. It's such a Larry riff. And then after Brain's freak out, we get a little bit of a speed picking clinic from Larry and he brings it on back down. And I love that. He's just like, I'm going to hit some 128th notes. Grrr, I'm done.
Yeah. And another little burst of Lur. It's just like over and done with very quickly.
I mean, it was one of those moments where in the recording we went, we need something right here to like really take it over the edge of that drum solo. And that's what it became. You know, Lur just said, how about, and it's like, yes, that, keep doing that for four bars or wait, no, 33 bars. And you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
19.2 bars, please. Thank you.
Three 11s.
So what Lur is doing in this track I think he's doing the exact same thing on Hennepin Crawler to fill space, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you were saying the other day about, I think you asked about Renegade, and he's like, well, I just tried to find the holes. I tried to find some places to be complimentary. And I think that in that musical chorus where Les drops the octave, as you said, Josh, he does that exactly well. It's just a great little riff. And you can't really imagine anything else being the guitar part for that part. You know?
Yeah. And at the same time, he couldn't necessarily play that cool little riff over the bass lick when Les is in the upper register. It's just not going to work out. So,
yeah, too crowded.
Yeah, it's too crowded. And then that's what's playing. That's what Les has when he's singing the verse. So that's why. And you know, because I'm thinking like, wow, four of these last six tracks on the album, we get Lurs Skankin. You know, and I remember when I was a teenager going, oh my gosh, he's kind of doing the same thing over and over again. But what choice do you have sometimes? You know, and I'm thinking, well, in this one, it works out great because of the mathematics of it. And it throws people off. So there's a reason for it, and it sounds fantastic. But then you also have the
also that it became a signature of Lur.
Sure, know, and that's the thing. Like, go ahead and
one
do
of the
it.
Things that kind of enveloped along the path up to this point, even before. Like, is it luck? He kind of does something like that, but it's not Skankin, but it's like beep, 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 beep. You know, it's like, okay. And then he starts getting to that point where it's like, jink, jink, and Les goes, yeah, I like that. Or, wow, that works. And it's like, it became a signature. So it's across the board everywhere.
Oh, Josh, what can I tell you about the lyrics? They're pretty straightforward, aren't they?
I will say the last time we talked about lyrics that referred to an LSD trip, Les Claypool showed
up. All right.
Oh, yes.
Seeing a pattern here.
Yeah.
Proverbial mind spread, right? That's what I took from
That's the proverbial mind spread. So it's definitely about tripping out, right? It's got to be an acid trip, without a doubt. The clues for me are in the... It's funny because we have three vignettes about these people's LSD experiences, right?
Yeah.
The narrator, he's alone somewhere in the water, and he's going to trip out on a heron in the sky. All right, as people do. And then we get Duchess, who... She's okay. This is one of my favorite lines, and as far as lyrics go, as for all the Brown album, she used to like to watch the boys watch her, and that's a great line. Poetically, it flows, but her end game is to move to California and trip balls, which I think is really funny. you know, go to Cal and spread her mind. And then we get Billy following the Dead with Arnie, and that's the giveaway. If you're following the Grateful Dead, you're dropping acid. Right.
Goes to the territory. Right. I love the line about Arnie, because then we've got like Arnie, the tune Arnie. So then we've got this like character universe thing happening with a conceptual continuity. So, I love that.
Yeah. And Soya, I wanted to ask you, because when I mentioned Arnie, when we were talking to Lur, you said Lur, Arnie. So you giggled over it. And I was like, all right. So do you want to tell us about Arnie now or when we get to that last track?
Dude.
I have some.
That's a Brain and Lur thing. I can't really give you a definitive answer on what that really depth, the depth of that is.
Okay. Well, anyhow, in these lyrics, Billy and Arnie get rich, but then they get caught dealing. So they get to go to federal prison. So yeah, there's
20 years, man,
about these, these experiences with acid, and that's kind of it.
Could it possibly be a semi, maybe not the best trip, not necessarily a bad trip, but there's a burning in his stomach the whole time. So it's kind of like, maybe it's not the best trip that he's had. Not exactly the grapevine.
Yeah, could be bad acid, man.
And I don't know that I've ever had an acid trip where my stomach wasn't like in knots or hurting the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Maybe that's the reaction,
I don't know how much acid you guys have taken, but...
It'd be a big fat zero.
Only a handful of times, but it's not count them on one hand, put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Good.
I mean, I'm just saying I've taken it 10, 20 times.
You know,
yep. Okay, well, there you go. We learned from the source. The man who invented it, Tim Soya. Tim Leary. I'm so sorry. I get you guys confused all the time.
Nope.
I don't have anything else to say about the lyrics. Like you said, Frankie, pretty straightforward. Three little tales, and then Brain gets to go crazy. But I will say, Soya, it does strike me as one of those where they put it together and went, that's a song. And then Les went, this, and this, and that'll do it, you know, for his lyrics.
Frank's got a solo. Lur's doing the same old thing. Blah, blah, blah. Simple lyrics, done. Next.
Yeah.
And you said, did you mention, Soya, before that it started with Les's riff, his bass riff, and then Brain
I can't remember. I would think so. I would think that this was one of those ones where Les said, how about this? And Brain started playing that groove, you know?
Right.
Because Brain could flip that groove out on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
That was not like he went home and, oh, he's playing an 11. Let's try to like pull off the middle of the triplet. No. Brain just went, how about this? And they were like, ah, fuck, we're grooving. It's like, okay.
Yeah,
okay, cool. Yeah, right. Okay, what else? What else?
Good old Brainer, man. That's Brain.
Oh, Brain.
All right. This was tough for me. I had to come up with an 1897 connection to this track.
Good Lord.
Because the problem is Lysergic wasn't around in 1897. So I did the next best thing, and I just searched for Marijuana 1897. Made it to the Library of Congress, and I would like to read you a very short article from the Tombstone Prospector, which was a newspaper, of course, in Arizona.
Nice.
Dog will hunt.
And
Dog will hunt.
The title is Stronger Than Opium. Now, here's the article. Remember, 1897, Tombstone Prospector. General Shriver, a guard at the prison who is working a force of Mexican convicts erecting a building downtown, discovered 6 2-ounce sacks of marijuana, and that's in quotes, last Saturday, which had been cached in reach of the convicts to be smuggled into the prison. The scheme did not escape Mr. Shriver's watchful eye, and he captured the stuff and turned it over to the superintendent. The owner of the drug can secure his property by calling at the office of the prison. Marijuana is a kind of loco weed. Loco, not local. Marijuana is a kind of loco weed, which is more powerful than opium. The Mexicans mix it with tobacco and smoke it in cigarettes, which causes a hilarity not equaled by any other form of dissipation. When smuggled inside the prison walls, the Mexicans readily pay $4 an ounce for it, but outside it is only worth about 50 cents an ounce. The weed is grown from seed by cultivation in southern Arizona and Mexico, but it is a dangerous thing to fool with. Man, that must have been some good sativa right there.
Thank you. Your peoples are drug influenced, man. What's going on?
What a strange place.
That's so, a nice piece there, Josh. That's there a good find.
Stronger than opium. Wow.
Yeah.
What a claim.
That is what a claim indeed. That is some probably rough reporting, I'd say. that might not be well researched.
It's almost as bold as La Special doing Frizzle Fry in its entirety. That's a bold statement right there.
Got to run away and hide now.
Oh, man.
Hey, dude, you grip that shit.
We shot ourselves in the foot because then we had to do it live like a couple weeks ago. And it wasn't like when we filmed it, we took a couple breaks. We did a couple songs more than once. But doing it live, I definitely needed some extra oxygen for that.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
In Colorado, yeah.
In Colorado, you're mile high.
It was pretty wild. We ended up finally doing it. We did it at like 2 in the morning in the rain. And it was actually awesome.
It was your Prince at the Super Bowl moment.
I guess so, yeah. Something like that.
I never saw that, Frankie.
Frankie's always trying to find everybody's Prince at the Super Bowl moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to it was my jamming with Rush backstage.
There.
Jamming in Rotterdam Rush moment.
That's an amazing story.
Absolutely. So the purpose of these live cuts is that I want to know what you guys think about Dutchess being performed by different drummers. So we have Brain, we got Jay, we got Paolo Baldi, and we got Tim Alexander. And I think that each rendition is unique. Mm-hmm. But I want to know what you guys think about each one. So let's start with some old school Dutchess from Riverport 97. So this is Brown Album lineup doing the track as it was meant to be in the record. Josh?
I was there. Right on. That was wimpy, dude. He didn't even do the killer super fast single stroke fills. Brain wimped it, dude. He totally wimped it.
That's the the risk you run improvising a solo each night. Sometimes it's gonna slam, sometimes it's not.
sometimes you just can't get there and get to it. And all of a sudden, Les goes, that's it.
Too bad. Soloing on down, yeah.
To be honest, as a drummer that like has tried this before, and like I like to have a little bit more time to set things up thematically in a solo. When you have a quick burst, you really got to fucking kill it really right away, or you're going to just kind of fall a little flat. Way too easy to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I totally know, and that's why I never do drum solos, ever.
Yeah. I never
every time I attempt it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I like never used to do them, and then I started forcing myself to do them in sets, and especially in the trio format, we can take a break, the two other guys can get off stage for a little bit, and the more I forced myself to do them, the better I got at them, naturally, like anything else. But yeah, it's easy to blow chops right away and then run out of shit to say, and then realize that you're really not saying anything meaningful. So it's just one of those things, you just gotta practice. At least for me, it got better the more I did them, you know?
So now that you mentioned that, Rory, I guess it makes it all the more admirable how Curve was doing almost 15-minute drum solos per night during Fromage and Hallucinogenetics.
And if you listen to those, I mean, he's the master of those, of kind of like the old like Rush drum solos, the way that they're really a whole piece of music, and thematically they have motifs, they have kind of a development that happens. I mean, honestly, Soya, have you heard any of those tapes from 2003 tours when Herb did the drum solo? So for Fromage, he would do it before 11 and then go into 11, and then Hallucino, he would do it before Spaghetti Western. And he had some sort of processing on his drums where he would have like phaser effects or certain delays. I mean, I still listen to those sometimes. The boys, when we're listening to them, will skip the drum solo. But I'll listen to them, and they honestly blow me away every time. I mean, I don't need to preach to you the guy's chops, but they're very much exemplified in those solos. Like, some of it's just like, holy shit, dude, are you really playing that right now?
I mean, it's an art form to be able to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you say, speak a language and not just go, check me out, I'm fucking badass. It's like making a solo out of it. I mean, Neil Peart did the same fucking solo for decades. It was the same thing every fucking night, you know? But, you know, Tim, he can improvise on anything, you know? It's like, if it's a solo, I don't picture him writing a drum solo and it being the same every night, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's half the fun as a performer. It's like, there's certain things that are scripted and you want to keep them as is, but especially the way that we play music, the music we like to play, that improvisational energy keeps things fresh, keeps things interesting, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally. If you're going to do a solo, you got to speak a language, not just blow people's minds with how your chops are, you know?
Exactly, blowing chops.
Spread minds.
Right on, Frankie. Thank you.
Yeah.
What do we got next, Frankie?
San Francisco, Josh. Is it 2011 or 2012?
I have 2012 here.
All right, so it's with Jay.
Let's hear it. There's that envelope filter. Man, those guys get to have all that fun, and Lur's just, meh, meh.
He's got to keep going. Yeah, that's not my favorite. I've heard a couple of those like from that tour or tour prior. The one I was recounting to you guys before from Gathering the Vibes, I feel like they really hit a stride. That one I wasn't as crazy about. I love when Jay and Les go back and forth. I just felt like they had a little tough time finding their bearings right there.
I agree 100%. That's not that great for me. Yeah. Sorry, Frankie.
No, I mean, I love the dynamic. And again, that's something, like we said, that's just the dice being rolled every night, you know?
Yeah. And especially if you're improvising, it's like, it could go good, it could go bad, it could go really good, or it could go really bad.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the world of jam vehicles, right?
Exactly. And you hear Jayski trying to do some of that double bass stuff in there. Again, that's kind of cool. It's uncharacteristic of him, you know?
Yeah.
Les forced it on him, actually.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For someone who had never played double kick before, I think he sounds fucking tremendous.
Yeah.
I think that Jay actually had a double kick pedal on the Sausage record, but he never used it.
Did he really?
It.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
He never used it.
I had no idea.
He never hit the toms on that record.
Yeah, he doesn't he just really kept play the beat. Times.
Oh my gosh, you're
only,
right.
If you listen to that record, Les told me they got through that recording and it got to the point where they realized, dude, you never hit the rack tom or the floor tom.
Yeah.
And then they did recreating and it's all the toms.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh,
that
okay.
might be the only song where there's rack and floor on that
oh
whole
my gosh.
Record.
I'd never wow. noticed that before.
And Les is like, come on, man, you gotta hit the toms, dude. What the fuck? Do something. Oh, shit, okay.
Do something.
And he does all the cool tom shit. It's like, yeah. Because oh, he's just kicking the beat on that one, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Frankie, guinea pigs. Tell us about those.
Guinea pig. All right. So this is prior to the one that we just heard. This is when they were testing out the Green Naga Hive tunes on the audience for the first time, hence the okay. title of the tour. I perceive a different dynamic on this one, as opposed to a year later in San Francisco. So let's see what you guys think.
So this is 2011.
There's some toms for your ass.
I like that more. I like Jay's phrasing more on that one. I feel like it, and the sound is better too. That helps. That's a little bit closer to like when we saw them in 2010, the kind of dynamic that was happening. So that makes sense, you know.
I'm going to comment that what Brain did off the cuff on the recorded solo makes more sense than freeballing space jamming on that.
Huh.
It's yeah.
Like, Brain's structure in what's recorded on the Brown album is like loose because he made it up on the spot. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Brain's like mechanical on the spot every moment. Like you could tell Jay's like, ah, ooh, okay. And Les like, nope, keep going. Okay. I'll do more. Okay. I'll show off a little bit more. Like, mm-hmm. I think I like the structure of Brain's solo on that better than I do the space jam of it.
Right.
It has its place for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was probably a point when Les has just said, yeah, let's just extend this part. Right.
He always does. Of course, yeah. You know, and let Jay do it. And some nights it was great. Or maybe the first time he extended it, Jay was on hit, you know, like mm-hmm. through the roof. And then they did it 10 more times. And it was like that or the one before where it's like,
mm-hmm.
whatever. It's cool. Fans totally. Dig it. Frankie digs it.
And Les would sometimes go somewhere else with the second half of it and kind of play some more melodic lines behind it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a hit or miss thing, like we said.
But as well, like I said earlier, the Brown album was the beginning of the jam vehicle, you know, like post anti-pop. Like that was where the songs were so simple. It was easy to just go into wherever world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. And then all of a sudden, after they split for a while, then when they came back, Les is like, oh, I was doing this in my jam band 2 and jam band 3, and now we're going to do a Primus again.
There is just something special about hearing Soya say jam vehicle.
put that in the sample library.
I want that to be the title of your autobiography, Soya.
Every time Frankie says Bowie, just put up jam vehicle.
Hey, Frankie, let's get fancy for the next one.
Fancy. So this is an interesting one. It's from a special configuration of the Fancy Band that performed only once at Bonnaroo. So this one has Merv on guitar.
Oh, nice.
When I met Paolo Baldi, I asked him about many of these performances, and he told me that out of all the drummers, it was Brain he had the hardest time with playing. Huh. So let's see what you guys think about Paolo tackling Dutchess.
I will say for the first half of that, it sounded like he was really trying to channel Brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite one of all the ones you played.
Wow.
I agree that it sounds a little bit more like he's trying to evoke that solo off the record.
I love how not even Brain, Jay, or Paolo will attempt the
yeah, right?
Live. I love that.
Yeah. It's a, like we were saying, that's a great solo on the record, you know?
Yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But no, Paolo's great, and, you know, he's leaving a little bit more space and maybe being a little bit more tactful and purposeful with his phrasing, I think.
He's speaking more as opposed to just showing off. You know?
Just chopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that drum kit that he played in that, if I remember correctly, was kind of strange. He had, like, the mini, like...
Yeah,
timbali things as toms and maybe like a Vista-like kick and maybe even roto-toms as floor toms.
That's right.
It's an interesting setup and sounded cool for that band. I also love the, is it cello or?
It's a cello, yeah.
Is that Sam?
That's Sam.
That was a really cool, the cello taking over for Lur's guitar part. I really like that sound.
Rad. Yeah. Man, I don't give
the last one up is Herf doing Dutchess. So let's see what he's got.
He's like, okay, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, he's telling Les, not Les telling him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose so. Yeah, I'm finished.
He had some really nice phrases in there, in particular the one where he went,
very hurt.
Kind of like one motif, a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, a little bit longer.
I'll put that one number two to Paolo. Paolo was number one of all these you played.
Nice.
Awesome. That's unexpected.
Yeah. Tim sounded good there. He knows how to you can put him in any situation and he can make it work, it seems. But he knows how to phrase it up. That sounded great.
Yeah, and I remember in particular on those Wonka shows being thrilled that he was playing that song, because I think that's probably the first tour that he played it, right? Or maybe a little bit before. Frankie?
The Wonka tour would have been the first time he played it, because
Wonka tour was the first time, yeah, for sure. He hadn't done Brown Tunes prior to that.
Right.
Oh really?
Well, with the exception of Shake Hands with Beef on Beat a Dead Horse.
Shake Hands, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which was sounded completely... Oh, you guys touched on this in that episode. Didn't sound really like he was trying to do it justice. There must have been something that happened with Herb where he just, all of a sudden, he was cool with playing all the other stuff and, like, really learning it, you know, as opposed to playing Beef when he played it in 2006. Kind of sounded like he was just getting through the song.
He was just trying to survive that one. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, I don't know. I think that's a really cool thing. I think mutual admiration and appreciation between musicians is one of the coolest things to see. So, like, any one of those drummers, any of the Primus drummers, you know, period, just, like, for them to dig on each other's parts and just be vibing, and they all have their own voice, it's a beautiful thing.
But it's really fascinating how each one of them will not go near a specific part that the other made in the studio when they're performing the songs live. Just like, you know, like Soya mentioned, like this drum roll. I can also think of hi-hat parts that Tim would never attempt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for lack of ability. It just seems to me that that's not him. You know,
he's exactly.
Yeah, I'll play Brain's part, but I'm not going to play it verbatim because I'm not Brain.
Right.
Yeah. Or Tim, it's out of respect. Yeah. It's like that dude exactly. ripped that thing. I'm not trying to cop that. Yeah. That dude nailed it. I'm not even going to go there. You
know? Yeah. Exactly. All three of those guys at one point or another have said that other dude is a great drummer and playing his lines is a bitch. You know, or some variation thereof, which is awesome. That's the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, which brings me to the next point. I have had some heated conversations with several people about this because I guess my opinion is pretty controversial, but I feel that when Danny Carey filled in, it was pretty underwhelming.
You know, it's interesting that you're bringing this up because you're not wrong. And coming from someone who, obviously, big Primus drum part guy, it definitely sounded like Danny didn't necessarily learn the shit. He's kind of hanging out, having some drinks, and then went for it. And like when I listened to that, I was like, well, yeah, that's Danny Carey. Of course it's Danny Carey. But yeah, and it's actually a testament to Herb because maybe he did try to learn some of Herb's stuff. And maybe it was like, even though it's Danny Carey, is still that speaks so much to Herb's ability and artistry as a drummer who composes these parts that really don't sound like anybody else. And maybe not so easy for even someone like a drum god like Danny Carey, who I also love, by the way, to even learn, you know?
We've heard three drummers take on this tune. We've heard three different drummers take on this tune. We're going to hear a fourth because we have a cover. And today's cover of Duchess and the Proverbial Mindspread.
See the Mike? Cheese Dippers again?
Were they good?
I just wanted to say Cheese Dippers one more time.
Was that one of the good ones from the last episode?
They were the ones that covered
Cheese
Bob's Party
were good,
Time.
Right? But they were good,
they covered
right?
Bob's Party Time. They were good. The band covering Duchess here may sound familiar to one of the four of us.
I want to know if I'm gonna make it. If I don't spend my ashes, if I do spend mine.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Swimming, I see myself treading water. I see
what the hell shirt am I wearing?
People, if there's a hair enough above me, I'd have to spend my mind.
Well, they gave it a shot.
I knew you were going to do that.
Sounded like it was in 12. Wasn't in 11. What was going on?
We added a beat.
Yeah. Rory likes that song so much he added an extra beat.
We added a beat.
So that is indeed the special covering Duchess, and this is from 2014. You guys have been covering it for a long time.
Yeah, I think that we actually started covering it shortly after that Gathering of the Vibes performance in 2010. Because we were so jazzed in the fact that they were playing that song again. Kind of like just kind of reawakened my love for that song. And we just like playing it. I don't know. We started doing it and we haven't played it in a long time. But yeah, it's funny that that's out there. I figured you'd dig that up.
Darn, I thought
that was cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
man. We like playing Primus. What can I say?
Right, yeah.
But I'm curious. What was that on your t-shirt?
I have no idea. I couldn't figure it out.
Wolf Mother, like, I think it is. It was a wolf.
It had like some thunders around it.
Definitely wasn't Wolf Mother.
All you have to do is search the special Duchess and the Proverbial Mindspread, and you too can try to figure out what's on Rory's shirt.
Yeah.
Duchess, I guess it's time to come down from your high because you've been tracked. Next time, guys, Frankie, if you could bring a lighter, I'll bring a friend.
Okay.
What's next? I don't even know.
Oh, Soya's so tired he has to rest his bones.
Rest in bones.
Rest in bones. That's a good song. I can listen to that one again.
It's a great drum beat.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. Thank you all for tuning in. Rory is at Rory Dolan Drums on Instagram. You can also find him at La Special Music. Please go find all their Primus covers if you haven't already. It'll just sweep you right into their world. We, of course, are at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. Frankie's at Frankie Beristein. Tim Soya.
I need to interject right here because every Monday, I know the episode is posted because I get 20 Instagram friend requests all of a sudden. I go, gosh, posted.
Every time.
And then delete, 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 delete.
My gift to
Sorry,
you,
guys.
Soya.
I'm not on Instagram.
It's all an illusion. Later days.
Willie Mays.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.